Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Capital Market Series with the New Gen Mindset Podcast. Nick, we have crazy market activity today.
Crazy world developments at the same time.
The most hated or loved man on earth had his company go public, and apparently it's doing well. I haven't looked at it, but love him, hate him, despise him, it doesn't really matter. He's front and center. You can't seem to miss him, but yeah, there's been a lot of interesting activity in the small cap, micro cap space with U.S. private equity acquiring Canadian small caps. I don't know how closely you've been following that recently.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the same time. It's if you look at the opportunity, especially from a Western standpoint, everything in the general markets are so overblown. Everything's so at the top. It's really hard to go to kind of justify spending and allocating capital to really invest in overblown markets where everything is just so expensive and you're fighting for the slightest little gaps in the PE values here and there. And it just comes back to like, where can you really try to find undervalued, neglected asset classes? And typically you're going to start finding them mostly in the small cap space right now.
Yeah. And over the last 3 months, there's been 9 different acquisitions from private equity with an average premium of 63%. So there's value. You just got to find it. And so I'll give a special shout out to Mathieu Martin, who brought that graph to my attention in the last few months, but he's been writing an exceptional newsletter. So if you're listening, big shout out to you. But today we wanted to bring somebody on here who has had an extensive and an exceptional track record, particularly in the pharmaceutical space, and now has really focused on making lives safer through nanotechnology. With us here today is the CEO of a company called Fendex Technology. Welcome to the show, Carolyn Myers.
Yeah, thanks. This is great. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. So Carolyn, the first thing we like to kind of do is, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, the development of your career, and then, you know, how you found yourself to be part of Fendex, and then go into the backstory of Fendex.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be here today. And just about myself, I live in New Jersey, but I'm originally from Montreal, Toronto area.
Our hometown as well.
Shout out to my fellow colleagues here. I started my career in the pharmaceutical industry, actually in British Columbia. So I've kind of been Montreal, Toronto, and then Vancouver. And I started there. I quickly moved up in the ranks and actually moved back to Montreal and worked for a pharmaceutical company there. Again, moving up the ranks, got promoted. Long story short, I ended up moving down to New Jersey and I'm still here. I worked in some of the large cap corporate offices and have held very senior level positions since coming down to the US in commercial as well as business development. In commercial, me and my teams, we've launched 25 plus products in the United States and around the world. And from an M&A licensing standpoint, have done more than 40 different transactions. So very much a business person, very much know how to bring products to market, how to bring companies into companies, and what to do with all these assets. I left all that. I started my own consulting business, and when I did that, I started finding about the startup community, and I'm like, this is really cool stuff, and I love it. And in fact, I am an angel investor myself. I'm part of 2 angel groups out of New York City, Mid-Atlantic Bio Angels and Golden Seeds. And through those 2 associations, I've got involved with a number of startups to help mentor them, build their decks, help them raise money, assess their assets, what to do with them, et cetera. And it just is so much fun dealing with these smaller companies. And, you know, in my endeavor to really get into the startup community, that's when I found out about this nanotechnology through a colleague who introduced me to my co-founder out in Vancouver who had identified this nanotechnology. And he said, hey, listen, you know how to do business strategy and assess assets. Take a look at this and let me know, can we put a business case around this? So I did. And I said to him, I said, you really need to license this. This is so novel. It's so cool. And there's nothing like this out there. And given my background in knowing the market that this potentially could be useful in, there is definitely nothing out there just like this. And so we started a company, we incorporated Fendex. I named the company too, by the way. I take full pride in that. And we incorporated the company in the summer of 2020, you know, right in the middle of COVID. Mm-hmm. And then we licensed the technology from McMaster University in early 2021. Okay. So that's how it came to be. And, you know, in this whole process, since we incorporated the company, have been dealing with the investor community way back when. And while I was really consulting with the fellow that had found nanotechnology, it just made sense that I roll into the CEO position, which I did, and I'm still there. But I still do a lot of work with other startups, help them advance their, you know, their products and raise money. It's just a fun community to be involved with.
You're planting seeds in the angel investor community. That's what I've learned. Every time people think of angel investing, I think they really, like, a lot of their minds kind of veer, oh, it's just tech related stuff. There's a whole other branch too. So you're primarily just in pharmaceuticals, bioscience. That's really the
forefront to your power.
Yeah. For those that don't know what nanotechnology is, how would you describe that to a new investor and just kind of paint a picture for us just so our listeners can understand that?
Sure. Well, nanotechnology is very, very, very small. It's like a billion times smaller, maybe not that much, but it's pretty close. Then you can see with the naked eye. That's how small it is. It's actually smaller than bacteria, and it's smaller than viruses, which is the reason why I like this technology, because what we're doing with what we licensed from McMaster is we are creating coatings, films, and sprays that with this nanotechnology, which is so small that bacteria and viruses can't stick to it. They can't get into the crevices of the nanotechnology, because our services, what they do is you get peaks and valleys, but these peaks and the valleys are so tiny that the bacteria, the viruses can't embed in it. And it also, because of the nature of the surface, it's low energy, which means that if you have bacteria on your hand and you touch our surface, the bacteria will stay on your hand rather than get transferred to the surface. So nanotechnology is used for a lot of things, a lot of different things. And so it's just one of those words that really speaks to something that is really, really tiny. And in our case, our nanotechnology is even tinier than bacteria and viruses, which is what makes it really suitable to prevent bacteria and viruses from sticking to the surface. And the key here is that if they can't stick to the surface, then they can't get transmitted. Mm-hmm. And this is a big problem, because 80% of common infections are transmitted by touch. So it's an area that really needs to be focused on.
So essentially what's happened is, I mean, we could talk about what transpired a couple of years ago, but there was obviously sort of this demand for this type of technology, because my understanding too is that there's almost like the medical costs associated with this on the long-term scale is close to like $30 billion, if I'm not mistaken, right? So there's obviously a huge gap and a need for something like this in the marketplace.
Innovative. And this is why I just want to say is this is why I kind of enjoy the small cap spaces. You get to really see at the forefront these type of innovative and creative solutions that are really trying to drive the future development of problem solving by reducing costs, by making things more efficient, simplifying the utility. And so this, you know, provides you as a perfect example of something that's simple, that's creative, to go and about and solving a problem that is seems to not really be at the forefront of the typical medical community or the industry, because they're using the same things year after year with very little innovation and creativity being implemented.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. The CDC, which everybody knows the CDC, mm-hmm. the WHO, as well as Health Canada, you know, they put out guidelines or recommendations about keeping surfaces clean, because this is a real problem in healthcare, for example.
Yeah.
You know, put COVID aside. I mean, this nanotechnology was being developed back in 2016, so nobody knew COVID was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because in those healthcare settings, and also in other settings, there are bacteria that live and thrive on surfaces that can potentially be lethal. And the problem is that the CDC, WHO, some of these other medical regulatory groups, they put out these recommendations on you know, stringent methods of hygiene or disinfecting, but you can't, it's not humanly possible to do it 24/7 a day, 24/7, right? You just simply can't. And so while one would think that these bugs would be under control and not causing infections and potentially lethal ones, they still are. And many of them, they have not been put at bay, which to me is why innovative solutions are needed. And I'll tell you, part of the reason why this is first of all, part of the problem is you just can't clean 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. 7 days a week. It's not humanly possible. The other thing is that a lot of these bugs, almost all of them actually, are antibiotic resistant. This is a problem, because if you get an infection, there are no antibiotics that can really help you. And that's why, Dan, you mentioned like this $30 billion cost. It's because the healthcare system has to do whatever they can to be able to help support you to fight off these infections. And it costs a lot of money, because again, there's really not a lot of, there's nothing really out there to combat these infections. If there was, these wouldn't exist. It's kind of like COVID. I mean, it's still around, but it's not a pandemic anymore. There's vaccines, people take vaccines. Unfortunately, bacteria are really smart. They replicate really, really quickly. And so and it's survival of the fittest, right? So they're like, you're not gonna get me with that antibiotic. And they mutate, 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 mutate. And guess what? All you need is one cell that mutates against that antibiotic. And next thing that you know, they're proliferating. And that is one of the key problems here, is it's really hard to control. And again, why innovative solutions are really, really needed. And you know, I believe that that's what we're doing. Are we going to prevent infections, et cetera? No, we won't. But I would like to be able to say that we're going to contribute to reducing those mm-hmm. infections, because in the United States alone, close to 100,000 people die annually from one of these infections. Many of them are elderly, and many of are immunocompromised. I'm sure you've heard the stories of people that, this is so serious, like people that go in the hospital to have a surgery, mm-hmm. and next thing you know, they die because they got one of these infections. It's like, wait a minute, like they say, if you don't want to get sick, stay out of a hospital, stay out of long-term care. So it's unfortunately, it's a problem. And some of us know about it, but there's some of us that don't realize how much of a problem this really is.
I guess it's also because, like, you know, human nature is just like, oh, okay, just live your life like every day, like just live in the moment. There's this whole psychology of like, hey, like just enjoy your time and stuff like that. But there's like things that like kind of creep in when you least expect it. You're right though. And I don't mean to get dark right now, but I've found out the last month and a half, three people that are arm's length to me lost somebody because they had an operation. There was a bacteria incident. So again, this is a much serious problem than most people anticipate, right? And I guess, you know, like you said, survival of the fittest. I mean, diseases, there's always going to be a new disease. Like, that's just human nature. Like, we got rid of polio. That's just one grand scale of a disease. There's something new that's always going to be developing. So you kind of always have to have that forward thinking sort of mindset, especially in what you're doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just heard there's an outbreak of measles locally. Mm. Like, what the heck? I thought that was gone. and guess what? There are more and more pandemics, right? And they're more frequent. I mean, they're more frequent, right? Who knows when the next one will be? And, you know, as much as we would like to think as a human race that we'll be ready for it, who knows, right? And so, you know, that's why you've got to combat them as much as you can and be forward looking or have that foresight to be able to hopefully help contribute.
But this does seem to be more of a proactive solution rather than a reactive solution, which is something that I find the medical industry as a whole tends to be too heavily focused on reactiveness. But reactiveness doesn't mitigate the problem before it happens, whereas this is more proactive, which I tend to be more on. We need more proactive solutions, and I find this falls within that. So with that said, can you go a little more, elaborate a little more on the product developments and type of solutions you guys are developing to kind of help with that?
Yeah, sure. So we are developing a film, and it's our lead product. We've got a few products in development. Let me talk about this one because it's our new product. We're going to call it Repel Wrap Film, because in essence, we claim that things repel off the surface. So the surface is repelling, albeit it just prevents adhesion. That's what it really does. But we're calling it Repel Wrap Film. When we licensed the IP and the technology from McMaster University, they basically gave us a film that was literally the size of a loony, right? And I'll tell you about the film in a minute, but we're now manufacturing thousands of sheets of film with this coating in literally minutes. So we've gone from something that's this tiny to coating thousands of feet of plastic, which is a real testament to our ability to be able to scale up. But how does that film work? Essentially, how it works is you take the equivalent of like a Saran wrap, and then you just put the nano coating on top of it, and then you shrink the film, and that's it. And then you in essence get this inert surface that essentially prevents most things from sticking to it. Bacteria, viruses, water, blood, and other kinds of liquids, whether it's oils or you name it, they just don't stick to the surface. McMaster, most of our testing has been done in McMaster's lab, and they have shown that they can reduce the adhesion of bacteria and virus by more than 98%. And the fact is, if they don't stick, then they can't get transmitted. And that's the whole thesis behind why we're developing these. So the whole idea with the film is you basically create these films. They're already in certain sizes to fit on certain high-touch surfaces in healthcare and other high-traffic venues. It has an adhesive backing. So you basically take off the protective layer of the adhesive backing and you attach it to a surface. So it can go on push doors, push rails, railings, things of that nature. So that's what we're creating, because these surfaces, which are touched a lot, can be very highly prone to contamination and potentially lethal bacteria. So that's our film. And so where we are, as I mentioned, we're now able to automate the process. We're doing pilot runs with it to continue to streamline the manufacturing process, to get our cost of goods down as much as we possibly can to then move into commercial production. That's where we are today. And I hope that we can, you know, finalize these pilot runs soon, move into beta testing. We have a number of sites lined up for beta testing. because as I say, everything's been done in the lab. So we really need to do it in the real world to see how they perform. And then once we've shown that they can perform, we're going to move into commercial production. In Canada, we do not need Health Canada approval for these films because of, number one, the claims we're making. Number two, because these are inert surfaces. Mm-hmm. And so when we have a film that we performs and meets the cost of goods we want it to meet, then we will bring it into the Canadian market, which we hope will be by the end of this year.
So there's a huge, so in reality, you have a very, what can I say? You don't have that big barrier of having to deal with the FDA or Health Canada in this sense, I would say.
Yeah, we don't. Even in the US, for our film, we do not have to deal with the FDA, but we are going to. We decided that we'll move forward. We could still bring the film to market, and we might, while we're working with the FDA. But I know the US market really well. Mm-hmm. And having FDA approval really
facilitates
that extra edge or credibility. Sure. Yeah, to get it into those places where it's really needed. So we will do that. It'll be a 510K type one. It'll be the simplest of the filings, relatively speaking. Nothing simple with the FDA, though, as we know. But having said that,
it's definitely not.
It's the simplest of the filings. So yeah, I suspect everything will go well because I've done this many times, so I know what I'm doing. But you know, we do need to meet with the FDA and move through that process. But in Canada, we can bring it to market. We don't need pesticide control board approval either. I guess it's Environment Canada. So when we're ready, we'll just bring it to Canada. So the next product we have is in an earlier stage of development, but I really like this one. Well, I like the film too, but I really like this one because it's a spray version of the film. So essentially what you do is, first of all, it's the nanoparticles, but they're in a suspension, and you basically spray it onto a high-touch surface, and it creates the same film that Repel Wrap film creates. So you can imagine it potentially might be easier to apply, and it has much broader versatility in terms of where it can be applied, like on door around doorknobs, on taps, things of that nature. At least those are the mark or the applications we are interested in expanding into, because those are places and that we know contain contamination. So we have signed a master services agreement with a nanoparticles company. We are working with them. They will do the assessment and the scale up of the nanoparticle suspensions or formulations, and we'll go down the same process that we're going with Repel Wrap film. I suspect we would have a product, assuming everything goes as planned and we go through the beta testing and everything, that we would have a product in the market in 2025.
And okay, if you don't mind, yeah, go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say, so right now it's still, you're in that development process. You've got the pilot for the film kind of rolling out. I noticed too, that's also in collaboration with
Universe.
Two companies here, Dunmore International, which is a pretty big one, and then Steel Partners Holdings, right? So maybe just touch briefly, like, how were you able to lock in sort of that partnership, those relationships, as much as you're able to dive into? Because those are pretty massive, scalable businesses right now.
Yeah, you know, Dunmore is an one of the operating companies of the parent, the Steel International, who's on the New York Stock Exchange. And you're right, it's a big company. It took us a long time to find Dunmore because what we're doing is very specialized. And, there's no question we found the right company to work with to help us to scale up our film. They have an R&D component to their facility as well as commercial manufacturing. So they, as well as with McMaster, we collaborate with McMaster, have been absolutely instrumental in developing a formulation that can be automated. And so from there, they, you know, they're continuing to do these pilot runs to streamline the process. But let me just tell you something about Dunmore. You guys, I always say this because I think it's kind of cool, but you know, the satellites, and they've got that shiny foil, it looks like foil on the outside of them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all Dunmore. Every single satellite that has that shiny stuff is Dunmore. And I've seen how those things are made. It's like really impressive. It's and by the way, that they're shiny because they have metal ions in them, like gold, purples, or silver, or something like that. They really are phenomenal experts in film manufacturing. And so we're really, really lucky to have them as a partner as we go through all these pilot runs. And yeah, it's great. And they're not too far from me. They're like 45 minutes from where I live. So whenever we do a run, I drive down there. It's cool.
So it
proximity.
Would be,
yeah. It's good.
That helps. It really works.
So the way I'm seeing it, so basically you guys have the patents, and then you would use them as the manufacturer. So it'd be kind of like this joint venture type of operation where you license out to them, or you share revenues of some sort, or like a royalty-based system. I mean, that I'm assuming is most likely still open in discussion. Nothing's been established, but it would potentially be something of that sort, so that they would take care of the manufacturing and you guys would take care of the IPing and the labeling and so on, like that type of thing.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it, right? We have not signed a manufacturing, a full-blown commercial manufacturing agreement with them, but you know, assuming we get to that point, we more than likely will. So they will manufacture the product, and in Canada, which will be our first market, our intention is to sell the product through distributors. And so they would supply the film to those distributors, and then the distributors would sell it, if, for example, into the healthcare system. That's how we're planning to do it. We would all obviously own the IP. Yeah. We get royalties, et cetera, or share in the profit, however we set up those agreements with the distributors. And then Dunmore would make money, obviously, from the manufacturing side. But Dunmore also has a marketing arm where they do sell certain products, and they have experience in selling antimicrobial films. And so, you know, the potential exists we can have a partnership with them as a distributor as well in the markets where they already have all those relationships. So
you guys have a good partnership kind of lined up and established to kind of help move you guys forward in the objective, which is nice to hear. And out of curiosity, do you see this being a product that is mostly business to business, or could this also business to consumer?
Because it won't be an FDA. It'll be FDA approved, but it'll also be available to anybody. Because it'll be on our website, so anybody can buy it if they want to. We will not focus on B2C though. We'll focus more on B2B, but it will be made available. You know, and again, we can do some social media around it. Who knows, everything goes on Amazon, so
no, because you know, at the same time, it's like, you know, the food industry, the restaurant industry, they have all kinds of problems of trying to mitigate bacteria and stuff like this. So you don't know, people in homes, bathrooms, old age homes, surgery rooms, like there's so many environments where you could see, you know, just putting it on doorknobs, or you have manufacturers automatically implementing it, or like, you know, people, there's some people that have their particular devices when it comes to bacteria and this and that. So I like, even from a consumer standpoint or from a restaurant standpoint, I feel like there's so many segments that could potentially tap into this innovative solution that it's cool to hear that it's not limited only to business, because it can be something that, you know, the general consumer or general market could also potentially buy as well.
Yes, you're right. And some of our beta sites will be restaurants.
Okay, there you go. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, and you know, we're lining up like long-term care or nursing home, for example. You know, a lot of them. We also will look at signing up contracts with sports arenas, malls. I mean, escalators is a perfect one, right? I don't know. Put your hand on the escalator as you go up the escalator, come down. Nobody touches. Well, I don't touch them. I was in New York City yesterday, and I always take public transportation when I'm in New York, because it's so much easier than getting in a taxi. Although taxis are also a potential customer, but you don't touch anything. Like, you don't. Like, I don't touch the escalator. A lot of people do, and I'm like, oh boy. But I don't touch the rails in the subway. Nothing. No bad. But when you know what lives on those things, yeah. It's...
Try to avoid it entirely, though, which makes total sense.
Yeah. And I'm not really a germaphobe, but I'm aware.
Correct. You're hyper aware, I would say the word is, because you're more in that industry. So yeah, your hyper awareness is a little more sensitive than, you know, where us, it's like, you know, so they say ignorance is bliss. So it's more of the fact that, you know, people are not as in tune with what's around them at a nano level or a microscopic level. So no, but it's very interesting to see that the utility of this product is very adaptable in different environments, and it definitely has that interesting capability to be a proactive solution. So it's very interesting as a story.
Let's talk about numbers real quickly, because most recent press release, I think it was yesterday, you guys announced that you're first of all, congrats, it was a non-brokered private placement, raised $2 million. I really, personally, this is my opinion, I really like the share structure. It's very tightly held. So for investors or potential investors looking at, you know, your story and Fendex, what does that financing represent to you guys? And sort of where's the opportunity here at the end of the day, at least for those long-term investors?
So I just want to say about the private placement, and thank you, by the way, is that it has been upsized, right? We have price protection until April 5th. So, we haven't completely closed. We hope to raise another $500,000. So with the money we've raised there, plus we also exercised all of our warrants, which were at 10 cents, which gave us an additional $735,000. So if we can raise another $500,000, you know, we're close to 2.7, 2.8 million raised in these last few months, which really, right. You know, it's amazing, especially, you know, the markets are starting to open up a little more, but for microcaps to raise that kind of money, is, you know, it's just, it's a testament to everybody I work with too. They're just amazing. So anyway, just so you know, the private placement is still open for anybody that's interested. But the plan forward is we're going to put some marketing dollars. Some of that money is for specifically marketing, because we're not doing a lot right now. We really were focused on doing the private placement. So now we're in a position to be able to do some marketing, with the idea of getting more liquidity into the stock. We don't have a lot, because as you said, our share structure is pretty tight, and it's held by a small group. In fact, this private placement is the first time we really opened it up to a broader group of you know, those that potentially want to invest. And that's the plan now, is to really start building liquidity and get the stock up. And so with that in mind, the next step in terms of financing is to do a capital raise. We have a base shelf. We've had it since the end of October. So if we want to move into a capital raise in the next few months, and we can do that fairly easily because we have that shelf. As you probably know, it's you basically open it up, you market it, and you close it. It literally can take days. So that really is a potential next step. Also, we have warrants that are at 50 cents. And so if we can get the stock price up, I think we're around 28, 29 cents right now.
Yeah, 27 on the Canadian side. Yeah.
27, it closed at 27 yesterday. So if we can get above 50, potentially we can get some of those warrants exercised as well. And overall, this is all public information. Mm-hmm. I mean, find it in SEDAR. If we were to exercise all those warrants, it's $3.5 million. So, yes. So that a potential private placement, a potential capital raise are what we're looking to do in the near future. You know, why Fendex? Well, I think we just have an amazing track record. We really, you know, RepelRap Film is what we've really focused on, and also creating a spray version of this is, in my opinion, if this comes to fruition, it could be a total game changer. You talk about the consumer market. This is this it's a consumer product. I have had one person who invested in the private placement. They really support us. Who hadn't invested previously, by the way, but they supported us from the beginning. That basically says, if you can bring that to market, you could be potentially be the next Windex, right? I don't know. Maybe let's be but fun.
Of course, absolutely.
But in the nearer term, it really is progressing with RepelRap Film, getting press releases out there on the fact that we're going to do beta testing, and the sites that we're going to do beta testing with, and just moving into the commercial production, hopefully in the second half of 2024. So those are big milestones to achieve. And we've already achieved many. We have shown that we can advance technology and have been successful at doing it so far. With regard to the spray, it's really getting to the next step where we can say, yes, we've assessed that our nanocomposites has assessed the formulation, and it can be scaled up. And we did it. Is, I think, a huge milestone for us. And then I didn't talk about this one project that we're working on. It's coating catheters. It's a very different, it's not high touch surfaces, but catheters can cause infections, especially like Foley catheters, which go into the bladder. There's over 1 million of them a year, just in the United States alone. In fact, everybody I talked to, not everybody, most of them are like, I know somebody that had one. They had a catheter in like for 4 days. And they got an infection. Well, guess what? If you're elderly, you can potentially die from those infections because they go septic very quickly or go throughout your body very quickly. So I'm very interested in this area. Again, my background, everything, just like ring, you know, coating catheters. So we're going down that path as well. We just announced that in December, but as we move forward and develop prototypes, et cetera, we'll also release that as well. So that I anticipate there will be a lot of news in the coming few months.
This is very
technology.
Yeah, this is a very like Nick mentioned, it's a very proactive solution that, again, no one's really thinking about until it actually affects them health wise. So I'm just excited listening to this because from a small cap investor, it's like, this has the opportunity and the potential to change the world. And those are one of those companies where I think, you know, they pay, you got to be a little bit more patient with it, especially in this market. But over time, if you guys execute, you're able to bring, obviously the first step is to get it into medical clinics, long-term care facilities, hospitals. You do really well there, you get more cash validation. Flow from that, it's validation, and then you're able to commercialize. There's a whole other ecosystem that you can go after,
right.
Where, I mean, if you go after Windex, I mean, that's a pretty big brand right there, right?
Well, I'm just telling you what somebody else said. Blue Sky is great, but
of course
we're laser focused on advancing these, and it would be really just incredible if we were successful.
Yes. Well, Carolyn, thank you for coming on. Where can the listeners find you?
Yeah, so you can find us on our website at www.fendextech.com. And obviously you can find us on CDAR Plus as well, but go to our website. Everything's there. You can reach out through our website as well. So please visit us and look at what we're doing and follow us. And if you do want to follow us, go onto the website and sign up to get our e-blast, because you'll hear everything that we as a company are putting out on a regular basis. You'll get it firsthand in your inbox.
And the ticker is on the CSE, it's FNDX, and on the OTCQB, it's FDXTF. Is that correct?
Correct.
There we go. Well, look, Carolyn, thank you so much for coming on. Very interesting discussion. This is definitely going on my watch list. Nick, I don't know about you, but I think you're just as excited as I am. And we're definitely going to be watching this story very closely now going forward for sure. But really appreciate you coming on and sharing the Fendex story with us and our audience.
Yeah, well, thanks. This is great. It's been really fun. Thank you.
Awesome. Happy to hear that.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time on the Capital Market Series.
Ciao, guys. Take care.